from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, Oklahoma's governor is demanding a review of a lethal injection which occurred this past Tuesday. The White House criticized the procedure, calling it inhumane, and Oklahoma delayed a second execution that had been scheduled. We'll discuss it. Then at 9:30, a new study published by the National Academy of Sciences attempts to answer a question at the heart of the capital punishment debate. How many innocent people are sentenced to death? We'll discuss the study and its implications. Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Tuesday evening, a death row inmate in Oklahoma, 38-year-old Clayton Lockett, was given a new lethal drug combination used for the first time in that state's history. It resulted in what has come to be called a botched execution. In Lockett's case, heavy breathing, teeth chattering, and straining, which brought a halt to his execution, though he died shortly thereafter of a heart attack. As a result, Oklahoma's Republican governor, Mary Fallon, ordered a 14-day stay of execution for another inmate by the name of Chris Warner, who had been scheduled to be executed 2 hours after the Lockett execution. Serious questions have been widely raised following this event about executions and the administering of the death penalty. States with the death penalty are scrambling to find new sources of execution drugs, since many drug makers in Europe opposed to capital punishment have halted the sales to United States prisons and corrections departments. We take all this up in this morning's opening First Forum segment, and joining us from Amherst, Massachusetts is Austin Sarrett, who is a professor of jurisprudence and political science at Amherst College. He's also author of a book called Gruesome Spectacles, Botched Executions, and America's Death Penalty. And welcome, Professor Sarrett.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And I get a chance to look at your book, and we should mention here that there's a whole chapter about Oklahoma, which is the first state to administer lethal injections. And I wanted to point out to the listeners also that Oklahoma, Missouri, and Texas have pretty much steadfastly refused to reveal the source of drugs that are used for executions. And this was, in Oklahoma, an untried protocol, perhaps why the White House condemned it. I want to go to constitutional law with you, though, if I may, first of all, since that's really your field.
Sure.
Often in arguments about capital punishment, I don't want to get into pro and con here necessarily, but you know, the phrase neither cruel nor unusual punishment is brought out. But as you point out in your book, it also says in the Constitution, no more than the mere extinguishment of life. And when you have these botched executions, whether you're for or against capital punishment, it does bring up a serious constitutional question along those lines.
I think you're right, but it doesn't actually say in the Constitution the mere extinguishment of life. That's a judicial gloss on what cruel actually means. So when the Constitution says no cruel punishment, in the context of the death penalty, the courts have said it means no more than the mere extinguishment of life, or no more pain than is necessary.
I'm sorry, this is judiciary interpretation, yeah.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is that the courts have never invalidated a method of execution in and of itself. So the courts have never said you can't use electrocution or you can't use the gas chamber. What has concerned the courts is what happens when these methods of execution, which themselves have passed constitutional muster, when they break down, when there are mishaps, and when those mishaps appear to inflict on those who are to be executed something more than the mere extinguishment of their lives.
And we have now, I believe, higher rates of these botched executions. They've actually gone up rather than going down.
So the book that has just come out is a historical study of every execution in the United States from 1890 to 2010, and examining every execution in the United States during that period, we looked at executions by hanging, by electrocution, by the firing squad, by lethal gas, and by lethal injection. The overall rate at which those executions were botched was a little bit more than 3%. The method of execution that had the highest rate of, if you allow me to say it, failure, the highest rate of being botched, is lethal injection at about 7%. And I have to say, that's a finding that really surprised me in light of the advertised virtues of lethal injection.
Yeah, the advertised virtues say that this is the most humane way to execute, and yet those numbers are kind of dramatic. I'm also wondering why, as you point out, these stories of technical failures of one sort or another, or lethal injection failures, botched executions, have been kind of obscured by history and the popular press.
So let me say, first of all, that yes, the claim about lethal injection is that it would be humane and that it would allow for a reliable and effective way of producing execution that didn't become cruelty. That claim is actually only the latest in a series of iterations of the same claim. So with the invention of every new technology, when we move from hanging to electrocution, the proponents of electrocution said more or less the very same thing. And when the gas chamber was developed and first used in Nevada, proponents of the gas chamber said the very same thing. So in essence, the story of botched executions in the United States is a story of a kind of romance of the idea that there would be a technological magic bullet that would, at the end of the day, ensure that we could execute in a way that was consistent with our constitutional values. And that's a story that, as you say, has been a little bit obscured in the popular press, and that is because in both law and in popular culture, botched executions are regarded as mere accidents, as unintended, and if you will, having nothing to do with the system of capital punishment. So typically in response to a botched execution, what you get is you get a newspaper account of the fact that the execution went wrong with some explanation or excuse, like the hangman was drunk, or the person who was supposed to make sure the electric chair worked well didn't do their job right. So there's been the tendency to see these botched executions as isolated events. And what my hope in doing this work and writing the book is to ask folks to think about whether or not an error rate of 3% is an acceptable error rate, whether an error rate of 7% in lethal injection is an acceptable error rate.
Austin Sarrett, again, is professor of jurisprudence and political science at Amherst, and his book is called Gruesome Spectacles, Botched Executions and America's Death Penalty. I'm also sort of inferring from what you said and from reading your book that there's really been an evolution, and the evolution has been an attempt to, as you intimated before, to try to have more humane ways of executing. I mean, here in California, for example, could you talk a little bit about the Carol Chessman case in the gas chamber?
Mm-hmm. So California led the way, actually, though it wasn't the first state to use the gas chamber, but it led the way in the use of the gas chamber. The gas chamber, unfortunately, as a method of execution, led to some really spectacular failures. And the Chessman case was one of them, and it really earned California the infamous, you know, international distinction and attention for having this unreliable method of execution. And in California and elsewhere, I think the relationship between execution and the hope for a technological fix is really a kind of American story. You can use these lethal injections to think about the way in which Americans think about technology in general. We expect technological progress and are somewhat naively surprised when the technologies that we rely on turn out to be not perfect. And the story of lethal gas and the gas chamber in California is just a part of that kind of puzzle of Americans' romance with technology.
Well, the Oklahoma story has certainly received a great deal of attention. Do you think that may be some kind of a game changer?
I do. But I think that in order to understand why it's a game changer, you have to understand the broad context of the situation of capital punishment in the United States. So if you look historically, botched executions have never played a very large role in the abolitionist struggle against capital punishment itself. When executions have failed, as I said, they've been written off as mere accidents, though they have propelled, these botched executions have propelled the search for a better technology. So what's different about this one? What's different about this one is that the United States today is in the midst of what I would call a national reconsideration of capital punishment itself. There's lots of evidence that if you look over the last, let's say, 20 years, the situation of capital punishment in the United States has changed dramatically. We go back 15 years or so, the high point in the United States, 300 people a year were being sentenced to death. That number's been cut in, by two-thirds. Comparably, the number of executions at the high point in the last 20 years was about 98. That number's been cut in half. Public support is down, and there are really serious questions being raised about whether or not we need capital punishment, whether it's worth the cost, and whether or not we're willing to run the risk of executing the innocent. It's in that context that I think this Oklahoma execution will be seen. It's another pebble, it's another rock, if you will, on the scales tilting against capital punishment in the United States.
Notwithstanding what you just said, the polls still seem to include the fact that most Americans favor capital punishment. I mean, there may be a diminution, but nevertheless, you have a lot of people talking about prisoners getting what they deserve and wanting to streamline it so that there aren't these appeals that just keep going on and on.
The polls register that about 60% of the American public, when asked in the abstract do they favor capital punishment, will say yes. That's down from a high of about 80. What's also happened is that support for capital punishment now tends to be broader than it is deep. So if you look at the intensity of those opinions, yes, there are some people that hold them really intensely, but many, indeed, I would say most of those 60% that support capital punishment do not hold them intensely. And in fact, if you offer people a choice between capital punishment and life without parole, support for capital punishment diminishes still further to the point where about 50% of the American public would say, yes, I would choose life without parole rather than capital punishment. And lastly, one good indication of what the American public thinks is what juries do. And so the mere fact that people say they're in favor of capital punishment as an abstract, I think pales in comparison with what I mentioned earlier, the dramatic drop in the number of people being sentenced to death. In that sense, to mix a metaphor, jurors are kind of voting against capital punishment with their feet.
We're talking, if you've just joined us, with Austin Sarrett, and he is professor of jurisprudence and political science at Amherst College, author of Gruesome Spectacles, Botched Executions, and America's Death Penalty. And if you would like to weigh in on this discussion, and I don't want to necessarily get into the whole capital punishment debate, but your responses would be welcome in terms of what happened in Oklahoma and perhaps what it bodes and what it means and how it ought to be at least seen in the bigger picture. We do welcome your phone calls, and you can join us now. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Again, feel free to join us, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite, toll-free at 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @kqedforum, and we'll go right to your calls here forthwith. But Professor Sarrett, let's just talk for a moment about why these botched executions haven't played a more central role in, well, the anti-capital punishment campaign.
Well, as I said, I think they haven't played a more central role because they haven't been seen as indicating anything systemic. They've, as I said, been written off. I think the context has changed. I think that what happened in Oklahoma and what's happening across the country with lethal injection is now going to be part of a conversation as states across the country, states like South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, and others, engage in a real debate about whether or not they want to retain capital punishment. I think what people are beginning to think about is not just what capital punishment might do for us, but what capital punishment does to us. Do we want to be the kind of people who risk executing the innocent? Do we want to be the kind of people that use technologies which can fail in such gruesome and dramatic ways as to lead to not just execution, but to execution as a kind of torture?
Let me bring in some comments that are coming in, and then we'll go to our callers. Sean writes, if death penalty opponents cared about painless executions, it would be easy to come up with standards and procedures that worked extremely well. Instead, they are doing everything they can to make them more cruel, to sensationalize the issue and sway the public. Another listener writes, thousands of people every day undergo anesthesia for surgery. Safe, painless, and proven method to make a person unconscious. Why this is not used before the administration of a lethal mixture, liquid or gas, is an utter mystery. And Regina says, NPR is over the top on reporting on this issue. All day yesterday was on NPR. Enough already. Who should care, really? The person murdered a young woman? Talk about her and her family and their horrible experience. And a tweet from a listener says, the question at the heart of the capital punishment debate is it morally right to kill people? Well, let's go to your calls and get your responses. And we go first to Geyserville. And Rebecca, join us. You're on.
Yes, thank you, Michael. I was curious a little bit about the drugs like sodium pentobarbital, where there's a ban by European countries to ship it to us. It's the same type of drug used for euthanasia and veterinary care. So I was wondering, you know, how that's being impacted. And the second question I have is for assisted suicide. I'm curious if the similar drugs are used for assisted suicide, or is that an overdose of some other type of medication?
Can you help us out here, Professor Sarah?
Well, you're stretching me a little bit beyond the area of my expertise, but after all, I'm an academic, and expertise never stops me from opining about things. In this instance, I think what you need to think about is the European embargo on these drugs for the use of lethal injection is in part an expression of the European opposition to capital punishment in the United States. So that's the first thing. The second thing is lethal injection is actually quite a complicated procedure. And it can be botched in a variety of ways. It can be botched if the technician can't find a vein. It can be botched if, in not finding a vein, the lethal chemicals, you know, go into the soft muscle tissue. It can be botched if the person being executed has an adverse reaction to the drugs.
And forgive me, there are cases pretty much along the lines that you just outlined in your book, almost right to with each of the examples you just gave. Yes,
sure. And part of the problem of lethal injection is that we don't want to see the body register pain. So the standard lethal injection protocol has been the so-called three drug cocktail, in which the first drug prevents the body from registering pain. So it's the very complexity of the drug cocktail itself has gotten us into trouble. And lately what's happened, your call is absolutely right to focus on the European ban. Lately what's happened is that states are engaged in a kind of experimentation with human beings. They're using drugs and drug cocktails that haven't been proven. They've resorted to getting their drugs from suppliers who've proven to be a little bit unreliable. So I think the comparison to assisted suicide or to anesthesia in surgery isn't quite apt, because those procedures are, if you will allow me to say, a little easier and a little more simple and a little bit more well-established than are the protocols for lethal injection.
Let me bring another caller on. Bill, that's you. Welcome to Forum.
Hi. Very interesting discussion, and it's great to have some real facts on this debate. And the question I have is, what is the most reliable form of execution based on the research? And I'll take my answer offline.
All right, thank you, Bill.
Well, I think it would. I think it will come as something of a surprise that the method of execution with the lowest rate of being botched was actually electrocution.
Yeah,
at just under 2%. That's a kind of tricky figure if you just ask the most reliable, because there also is the question about what the kinds of mishaps are, and electrocution unfortunately frequently resulted in the condemned being catching on fire. So while the percentage of executions that are botched in lethal injection is slightly lower, that's sort of roughly 2% as opposed to a 3% average, the kinds of things that went wrong in electrocution, I think most people found to be really quite horrible and quite indecent.
Well, why was, I remember all those Jimmy Cagney movies, you're going to get the chair type of stuff. I mean,
sure.
Why was, tell us a little bit historically about why the electric chair was essentially passed on.
Well, let me tell you first why it was
Because those numbers you gave are pretty low, really. Yeah.
Why it was, well, again, there, you know, it's 2% as opposed to 3% as an average, but electrocution was brought on with the promise that electricity would be a humane substitute for hanging. Hangings went wrong in a variety of ways. Instead of having the neck quickly broken, people strangled to death at the end of the rope, or occasionally, if the length of the rope wasn't gotten right, people were decapitated. The proponents of electrocution said that this would be a humane way to do it. And in fact, there was an interesting competition between Thomas Edison and George Westinghouse as to whose form of current, AC or DC, would be used. Eventually, New York, which was the first state to use electrocution, chose Westinghouse's current, actually to the relief of Thomas Edison, who wanted to discredit Westinghouse's form of current as dangerous. And electrocution was abandoned, I think, largely because of what I said, not the rate at which it was being botched, but the gruesomeness and the grotesqueness of the kinds of mishaps that happened in electrocutions.
Is it safe to say, though, Professor Serrett, that the vast majority of executions have been successful, if success is based on the idea of actually killing the person who's been condemned?
So it depends on what you mean by success. If I would
not botched, in other words,
if I were to tell you that between 3% and 7% of every takeoff from San Francisco Airport was going to result in a crash, you might say, well, that's success because it means between 93% and 97% are successful in getting off the ground. Look, the standard that the Supreme Court is articulated for capital punishment is best summarized with the idea that death is different. And the court has demanded heightened standards of reliability when it comes to this ultimate punishment. And that may mean that we need to have a debate as a society about what an acceptable error rate is for the death penalty. But it seems to me that if we say between 3% and 7%, that's the error rate, that's a conversation that doesn't, I think, easily fit with, oh yes, we're succeeding, because our commitment is to an efficient, effective, and reliable way of ensuring that when someone is executed, they get the punishment, and the punishment is death. The punishment is not torture and suffering before death. And ultimately, the question of how we punish and what punishments we use is a question about who we want to be, not just what we want to do to those who we are punishing. Do we want to be the kind of society which permits execution in a way that leads to cruelty? I hope that the answer to that question is no.
Well, we're getting a lot of listeners who are suggesting perhaps using an opiate like heroin and other kinds of chemicals, and you know, maybe using anesthetics and so forth. I think, you know, a lot of good questions have been raised about this, as well as obviously the question about the death penalty and whether morally the death penalty is defensible, that is, a state killing a person or not. And Austin Serrett, good to have you with us on Forum. Appreciate your being with us.
Thanks so much for a lively conversation.
Again, Professor Serrett is Professor of Jurisprudence and Political Science at Amherst. His book, Gruesome Spectacles, Botched Executions and America's Death Penalty. We're going to have another look at the death penalty when we come back. There's a new study out, actually published in the National Academy of Sciences, all about estimates of how many are put to death who indeed may have been innocent. When we return on Forum, I'm Michael Krasny.